Chapter 24. She's my wife. James. Well, to cut a long story short, I may say that she secretly married me, in spite of your lordship's prohibition, about 3 months ago. And I must add that, though she cooled down rather quickly, everything went on smoothly enough between us for some time, in spite of the awkwardness of meeting only by stealth. We were only waiting for a convenient moment to break the news to you when this idle Adonis turned up, and after poisoning her mind against me, brought her into this disgrace. Here the operatic luminary, who had sat in rather an abstracted and nerveless attitude till the cousin made his declaration, fired up and cried, "I declare before heaven that till this moment I never knew she was a wife. I found her in her father's house an unhappy girl, unhappy, as I believe, because of the loneliness and dreariness of that establishment, and the want of society, and for nothing else whatever. What this statement about her being your wife means I am quite at a loss to understand. Are you indeed married to him, Laura?" Laura nodded from within her tearful handkerchief. "It was because of my anomalous position in being privately married to him," she sobbed, "that I was unhappy at home and I didn't like him so well as I did at first, and I wished I could get out of the mess I was in. And then I saw you a few times, and when you said, 'We'll run off,' I thought I saw a way out of it all, and then I agreed to come with you." Well. And is this true?" murmured the bewildered old nobleman, staring from James to Laura, and from Laura to James, as if he fancied they might be figments of the imagination. "Is this, then, James, the secret of your kindness to your old uncle in helping him to find his daughter? Good heavens! What further depths of duplicity are there left for a man to learn?" "I have married her, Uncle Quantock, as I said," answered James coolly. "The deed is done, and can't be undone by talking here." "Where were you married?"
"At St. Mary's, Toneborough."
"When?" "On the 29th of September, during the time she was visiting there."
"Who married you?"
"I don't know. One of the curates. We were quite strangers to the place. So, instead of my assisting you to recover her, you may as well assist me."
"Never. Never."
Said Lord Quantock. "Madam, and sir, I beg to tell you that I wash my hands of the whole affair. If you are man and wife, as it seems you are, get reconciled as best you may. I have no more to say or do with either of you. I leave you, Laura, in the hands of your husband, and much joy may you bring him, though the situation, I own, is not encouraging."
Saying this, the indignant speaker pushed back his chair against the table with such force that the candlesticks rocked on their bases and left the room. Laura's wet eyes roved from one of the young men to the other, who now stood glaring face to face, and, being much frightened at their aspect, slipped out of the room after her father. Him, however, she could hear going out of the front door, and, not knowing where to take shelter, she crept into the darkness of an adjoining bedroom, and there awaited events with a palpitating heart. Meanwhile, the two men remaining in the sitting room drew nearer to each other, and the opera singer broke the silence by saying, "How could you insult me in the way you did, calling me a fellow, and accusing me of poisoning her mind toward you, when you knew very well I was as ignorant of your relation to her as an unborn babe?"
"Oh yes, you were quite ignorant. I can believe that readily," sneered Laura's husband. "I here call heaven to witness that I never knew."
Recitativo the rhythm excellent, and the tone well sustained. "Is it likely that any man could win the confidence of a young fool her age, and not get that out of her? Preposterous. tell it to the most improved new pit stalls. Apostrophe apostrophe, Captain Northbrook, your insinuations are as despicable as your wretched person. Apostrophe apostrophe, cried the baritone, losing all patience. And springing forward he slapped the captain in the face with the palm of his hand. Northbrook flinched but slightly, and calmly using his handkerchief to learn if his nose was bleeding, said, I quite expected this insult, so I came prepared. Apostrophe apostrophe, and he drew forth from a black valise which he carried in his hand a small case of pistols. The baritone started at the unexpected sight, but recovering from his surprise said, Very well, as you will, apostrophe, though perhaps his tone showed a slight want of confidence. Now, apostrophe, continued the husband, quite confidingly, we want no parade, no nonsense, you know. Therefore we'll dispense with seconds? Apostrophe, the signer slightly nodded. Do you know this part of the country well? Apostrophe apostrophe, cousin James went on, in the same cool and still manner. If you don't, I do. Quite at the bottom of the rocks out there, just beyond the stream which falls over them to the shore, is a smooth sandy space, not so much shut in, as to be out of the moonlight. And the way down to it from this side is over steps cut in the cliff, and we can find our way down without trouble. We too will find our way down, but only one of us will find his way up, you understand? Apostrophe apostrophe, quite. Apostrophe apostrophe, then suppose we start. The sooner it is over the better. We can order supper, before we go out supper for two. For though we are three at present apostrophe, three? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. You and I and she apostrophe, oh yes. Apostrophe apostrophe apostrophe, we shall be only two by and by, so that, as I say, we will order supper for two, for the lady and a gentleman. Whichever comes back alive will tap at her door, and call her in to share the repast with him. She's not off the premises. But we must not alarm her now, and above all things we must not let the inn people see us go out. It would look so odd for two to go out, and only one come in. Ha! Ha! Apostrophe, ha! Ha! Exactly. Apostrophe, are you ready? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh quite. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then I'll lead the way. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he went softly to the door and downstairs, ordering supper to be ready in an hour, as he had said. Then making a feint of returning to the room again, he beckoned to the singer, and together they slipped out of the house by a side door. The sky was now quite clear, and the wheel marks of the brougham which had borne away Laura's father, Lord Quantock, remained distinctly visible. Soon the verge of the down was reached, the captain leading the way, and the baritone following silently, casting furtive glances at his companion, and beyond him at the scene ahead. In due course they arrived at the chasm in the cliff which formed the waterfall. The outlook here was wild, and picturesque in the extreme, and fully justified the many praises, paintings, and photographic views to which the spot had given birth. What in summer was charmingly green and gray, was now rendered weird and fantastic by the snow. From their feet the cascade plunged downward almost vertically to a depth of 80 or 100 feet before finally losing itself in the sand, and though the stream was but small, its impact upon jutting rocks in its descent divided it into 100 spurts and splashes that sent up a mist into the upper air. A few marginal drippings had been frozen into icicles, but the center flowed on unimpeded. The operatic artist looked down as he halted, but his thoughts were plainly not of the beauty of the scene. His companion with the pistols was immediately in front of him, and there was no handrail on the side of the path toward the chasm. Obeying a quick impulse, he stretched out his arm, and with a superhuman thrust sent Laura's husband reeling over. A whirling human shape, diminishing downward in the moon's rays farther and farther toward invisibility, a smack smack upon the projecting ledges of rock at first louder and heavier than that of the brook, and then scarcely to be distinguished from it, then a cessation, then the splashing of the stream as before, and the accompanying murmur of the sea, were all the incidents that disturbed the customary flow of the little waterfall. The singer waited in a fixed attitude for a few minutes, then turning, he rapidly retraced his steps over the intervening upland toward the road, and in less than a quarter of an hour, was at the door of the hotel. Slipping quietly in as the clock struck 10, he said to the landlord, "Over the bar hatchway, the bill, as soon as you can let me have it, including charges for the supper that was ordered, though we cannot stay to eat it, I am sorry to say." ... he added with forced gaiety, "the lady's father and cousin have thought better of intercepting the marriage, and after quarreling with each other have gone home independently." ... "Well done, sir." ... said the landlord, who still sided with his customer in preference to those who had given trouble, and barely paid for baiting the horses. "Love will find out the way, as the saying is. Wish you joy, sir." ... Signor Smith, as I went upstairs, and on entering the sitting room found that Laura had crept out from the dark adjoining chamber in his absence. She looked up at him with eyes red from weeping, and with symptoms of alarm. "What is it? Where is he?" ... she said apprehensively. "Captain Northbrook has gone back. He says he will have no more to do with you." ... "And I am quite abandoned by them. And they'll forget me, and nobody care about me anymore." ... she began to cry afresh. "But it is the luckiest thing that could have happened. All is just as it was before they came disturbing us. But, Laura, you ought to have told me about that private marriage, though it is all the same now. It will be dissolved, of course. You are a widow, virtually a widow." ... "It is no use to reproach me for what is past. What am I to do now?" ... "We go at once to Cliff Martin. The horse has rested thoroughly these last 3 hours, and he will have no difficulty in doing an additional half dozen miles. We shall be there before 12, and there are late taverns in the place, no doubt. There we'll sell both horse and carriage tomorrow morning, and go by the coach to Downstaple. Once in the train we are safe." ... "I agree to anything," she said listlessly. In about 10 minutes the horse was put in, the bill paid, the lady's dried wraps put round her, and the journey resumed. When about a mile on their way, they saw a glimmering light in advance of them. "I wonder what that is?" ... said the baritone, whose manner had latterly become nervous, every sound and sight causing him to turn his head. "It is only a turnpike," said she. "That light is the lamp kept burning over the door." ... "Of course, dearest. How stupid I am." ... On reaching the gate they perceived that a man on foot had approached it, apparently by some more direct path than the roadway they pursued, and was, at the moment they drew up, standing in conversation with the gatekeeper. "It is quite impossible that he could fall over the cliff by accident, or the will of God on such a light night as this," the pedestrian was saying. "These two children I tell you of saw two men go along the path toward the waterfall, and 10 minutes later only one of them came back, walking fast, like a man who wanted to get out of the way, because he had done something queer. There is no manner of doubt that he pushed the other man over, and, mark me, it will soon cause a hue and cry for that man." ... The candle shone in the face of the signer and showed that there had arisen upon it a film of ghastliness. Laura, glancing toward him for a few moments, observed it, till, the gatekeeper having mechanically swung open the gate, her companion drove through, and they were soon again enveloped in the white silence. Her conductor had said to Laura, just before, that he meant to inquire the way at this turnpike, but he had certainly not done so. As soon as they had gone a little farther, the omission, intentional or not, began to cause them some trouble. beyond the secluded district which they now traversed, ran the more frequented road, where progress would be easy, the snow being probably already beaten there to some extent by traffic. But they had not yet reached it, and having no one to guide them, their journey began to appear less feasible than it had done before starting. When the little lane which they had entered ascended another hill, and seemed to wind round in a direction contrary to the expected route to Cliff Martin, the question grew serious. Ever since overhearing the conversation at the turnpike, Laura had maintained a perfect silence, and had even shrunk somewhat away from the side of her lover. "Why don't you talk, Laura?" apostrophe he said with forced buoyancy, "and suggest the way we should go." " "Oh yes, I will," " she responded, a curious fearfulness being audible in her voice. After this she uttered a few occasional sentences which seemed to persuade him that she suspected nothing. At last he drew rein, and the weary horse stood still. "We are in a fix," " he said. She answered eagerly. "I'll hold the reins, while you run forward to the top of the ridge, and see if the road takes a favorable turn beyond. It would give the horse a few minutes' rest, and if you find out no change in the direction, we will retrace this lane, and take the other turning." " The expedient seemed a good one in the circumstances, especially. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.